Katie.
I'm Erica.
And this is Book Talk. Welcome to Book Talk.
Hi, we're happy that you're here.
I'm Erica.
I'm Katie. Book Talk is a weekly podcast where we read a section of a book and then we talk about it.
So this week we started reading Two Girls Down by Luisa Luna. In these first few chapters, we find out that Jamie, who's a mom living in small town Pennsylvania, takes her kids to Kmart on a casual Saturday morning, and the two girls are kidnapped out of the car while she's inside the store. So this first section follows kind of the first 48 hours, which we know from all of the crime shows are crucial. And so it follows her and her work with the police, and then her family actually hires a private detective to come from California as well to help find these girls. So we meet Jamie, who's the mom. Her two kids, Kylie and Bailey, are 10 and 8 years old. They are, they have a very sisterly dynamic of semi-hating and also loving each other. They are definitely both precocious and a little bit anxious, I think, on Bailey's side. So we'll see how that, I think that was a really important point she kept making, was Bailey's kind of anxiety. So we'll see how that plays out in the story. But I think those are going to be obviously three crucial characters.
What do you think about the way that we're introduced to the family and to the two girls who kind of are the motivating force behind the plot?
I think she introduces them in a way that makes you immediately empathize with them and with her situation. I felt like this introduction to the mom and the girls was good, and I immediately liked them. And then we met Jamie's family. I was like, I don't know if I like them anymore. And so I think she did that, interestingly, in the beginning before they get kidnapped to kind of rope you into it. I think if she would have started with Jamie's whole family, I would have been more annoyed from the get-go just because of how they treat people.
Yeah, it's very relatable the way she introduces Jamie as like a single mom who's stressed out and just wants to like go to work and browse. U.S. Week or People Magazine or yeah. something. Yeah, on her computer.
Very also relatable.
Yes, and very like Midwestern dynamic of like having to run to Kmart to buy a birthday present that's under $10 and like,
yeah,
you know, kind of family who is getting by but has a lot on their plates.
And I think you also see how much Jamie loves them in that, because she's constantly worried about like if her girls are happy enough, like is she going to see this huge party and want that? Am I going to be able to give her that? Which I think is very relatable and makes you feel sad. But in that moment, I was also thinking those kids are more aware than you think that they are. Like, she's not going to ask for that. Not that we probably won't even get there, but
I also loved the scene at the gas station, which is before you get to Kmart, where the girls go in to go to the bathroom and it's just taking too long. And so Jamie goes in after them, and you almost like I knew going into it that this is a story of like two girls getting abducted. So you think it's going to happen at the gas station and then it doesn't. And it's like setting you up to like, you think that you know how this is going to go and you might not. And I don't know if that, to me, that seemed intentional from Luisa to be like, you think you know how this story is going to go, but you don't know. And there's going to be twists. And that was our first taste of that.
I think it's also interesting, like, they're so young and she sends them into the gas station. And I'm like, oh, my God, no, don't do it. Don't send them anywhere alone. I don't know how I would ever have kids without just constantly feeling that insane anxiety. Like, how do people do it?
Then we meet two of kind of our maybe anti-heroes or heroes who are going to investigate this for us. The first is Cap, who is a private investigator. We learn a lot about Cap's backstory, both his relationship with his wife, Jules, or his ex-wife, his daughter, who we'll talk about in a little bit, but also his marriage, his taking the fall for his friend who was a cop. And we're really spending time inside his head, which is interesting that we're in Cap's head and not as much in Vega's head. He's a very like relatable guy who wants to do the right thing, who loves his daughter, gives her really great advice, and then kind of deals with it when she gives him that great advice back.
Yeah, he's like an all-star dad. I do think the very interesting part of that was about him talking about taking the fall for M, and that Nell knows so much about it. I mean, I guess that's not shocking. There were probably a lot of articles in press at that time, but I like how open he is with her about it. What did you think about Vega and meeting her?
So Vega is definitely a mystery, and I think it's intentional that she's a mystery to us. We kind of learn about how she does handstands and yoga. She, at the end of that chapter, we see a little bit of, like, she obviously has kind of a troubled past, because it says when she closes her eyes, there's only ever fights. But we don't really know why and what that means. But we do know she has a pretty prolific record of finding missing and lost children. So she's found 18 missing children at this point before she gets called in to investigate the disappearance of Kylie and Bailey.
I loved when they said, they're like, well, how many kids have you found? She said 18. You're like, okay, well, how many times have you been hired? She's like, 18. You're like, oh, she's a badass. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to talk about was drugs. We know this takes place in Pennsylvania in the Midwest. We know that the, or at least hopefully we should all know, the Midwest is definitely one of the epicenters of the opioid epidemic. And they casually mention that when Vega's talking to the investigator.
I think it gives motive to there being, or it gives credence to the theory that there's some like nefarious actors in the town, at least. Not necessarily Jamie herself. But there's definitely like drugs, money, crime, you know, a lot of that is like kind of in the background of this family who is struggling and kind of just trying to get by.
And I think presenting Jamie in the way that they did is interesting in light of this specific drug epidemic, because opioids are not normally in super crime ridden neighborhoods. Like, it's the white middle class drug. So it's like, I mean, obviously her neighborhood is, the people are struggling, and I think that that's important, but I think, I wonder how that will play into, like you said, the nefarious characters, I wonder. I also wonder about Darrell, her Saturday night only boyfriend. I don't know why I thought that was funny, but like, I wonder about him. I don't think he did it. I think he sounds pretty like lazy, but I wonder again if he owes money or if it has anything to do with drugs. Do you have any other theories? I feel like that's my main one, is that somehow drugs are involved with this kidnapping. Do you think it could be something else?
Yeah, it's very like, I'm already putting on my like Law and Order hat of trying to play detective on my own. I tend to think, based on the way it happened, that this was a like random person who doesn't know them who took the girls because they had an opportunity. I think it was like a, maybe someone who had bad intentions with the two girls, but, or maybe thought they could blackmail the mom for money, blackmail the dad for money, something like that. But I don't think it's someone that they know, because if it's someone that they know, or if it's Darrell who has access to the house, it makes much more sense to take the girls at night and give like a window of time where they can get away or they can get distance from Jamie before she realizes. I mean, this person had less than 10 minutes to get two girls out of a car in a public place in daylight.
Quietly. Well, okay, that makes me feel like maybe it was somebody. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think like the blackmailing is so interesting. Like, you're stealing two girls in like a poor neighborhood out of a Kmart parking lot. Like, how much money do you think you're going to get? Then also it makes me feel like it might have been, and I feel like this is a pretty common thing in true crime too, is like, was it someone they knew? Because they would go a lot easier if it was. Like, you could get them out of the car in broad daylight without a fight if they knew you, or if you, you know, the old adage of like promising them candy or something that they wanted.
That's a great point about how someone who knew the girls would be more, have more access to like get them out of the car. But I don't know. I mean, again, the Law and Order detective in me would say the most likely suspects are usually the ones who it is, which is the boyfriend or the husband. But I just don't see the motive in this case.
Let's go back to Vega, since we were talking about her previously. And I think we just said a couple of words. Who does she remind you of?
The book so far just reminds me a lot of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and our like kind of female assassin detective bounty hunter-esque character in terms of like how Lisbeth is portrayed. I'm also reminded of Villanelle from Killing Eve. I don't know if you've seen that show with Sandra Oh, which is just amazing. But kind of this, like, Vega is the kind of intelligent detective who, it's almost easy for her. This whole thing is easy. And that reminds me of Villanelle. Villanelle has no problem getting access to certain places, having her targets trust her, being able to execute plans extremely well. It's like this effortless intelligence that is so unattainable and honestly slightly unrealistic. It's like Sherlock Holmes, where you walk into a room and you can be like, oh, that cupboard is open 3 inches. That tells me that someone was in here at 4:32 p.m. last night. Let's go get him. Like, the way she's okay. able to, like, call from, like, the shoes in the foyer and the book on Cap's car window that he has a daughter who's in high school. It's like, no one notices that stuff. That's wild. Well, it's crazy.
Going into a situation knowing that you need to be extremely observant, you're not, she's not randomly walking into this guy's house. She's like, I need this guy. So she's kind of going into it that view, which I feel like makes it a little bit more realistic. I think the part you said about she's able to see things in people and make them do what she wants reminds me of when she gets the Brandon Haas guy. Because I feel like the reason she's able to, like, walk up there and get what she wants could have something to do with her being an attractive woman, too. Like, she does walk up to that group of guys, and they're obviously disgusting. But, like, she gets very close, which if she was someone who looked like Sherlock Holmes walking up to that group of guys, no. Like, that would not... they wouldn't have had their kind of guards down the same way that they did when she walks into a room. So I feel like that kind of helps her access things as well.
Cap also realizes this when she's smiling at him. She's kind of like looking down and then looking back up at him. And he picks up on this, like, is she flirting with me? Like, who is this version right. I'm seeing? And even when she smiles at him, he recognizes, like, this feels intentional. And then later we have her in the car where she, like, looks at herself smiling in the mirror just to see what it looks like. And we're kind of getting insights into, like, maybe she has, like, you know, maybe she has, like, sociopathic tendencies, or, like, she's like a Dexter character where, like, she has no feelings or remorse about what she's doing. Which brings me to one of the questions I don't know yet about Vega, which is, why do you think she's attracted to helping children and to finding missing children?
I hope we find out more about that as we read. But I do think it's probably in some way tied into her own childhood or something that happened to her as a child. It feels like it could be like a way to make something right. Maybe it wouldn't be her, but maybe something that she saw happen and couldn't stop, or a situation that she couldn't control. And maybe that's now why she is so in control of this and so focused on fixing this problem. I feel like a lot of times that happens when there were problems that you couldn't fix previously. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the kind of interpersonal dynamics that we're seeing throughout the book. I want to start with, since we're already talking about Vega, I feel like we're going to be a little obsessed with her throughout this book. Not sorry about it. Her and her hacker, the guy who she gets information from, like, who do we think he is? What do we think about, I'm going to say that I hate that kind of dynamic and how they, I want to take that back. I don't hate it, but what do we think about their dynamic and how they kind of speak to each other and how she knows him?
I will say, I also had the assumption that this character is called the Bastard. I think we'll probably just call them the Hacker.
We'll just skip that.
We don't love that. But I also assumed it was a guy, but reading back, it's not totally clear who this person is. I almost hate that she relies so much on this character in the background. It's almost like she's the muscle and they are the brains, because they're the one who are actually giving her the information she needs to find these people.
What do we think about that kind of dynamic, though? I feel like it's rare that the woman is the muscle and that's like this guy, this girl, this guy, this human is the brains behind it. I also just, like, I don't know. Who is he? Is he Huck? Like, what's happening?
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about the switch. I had thought about it as taking something from her character and taking something from her image, because she's given all of the like praise and glory and also the money for finding these people, when really a lot of the work is done by accessing information. And like, we're assuming he's just like hacking police systems and trackers and things like that to find these people.
Right. So like every man in power. Right. Like benefiting and getting the recognition and the money for the things that someone else is doing. But now it's switched. Maybe that makes her a little bit more relatable. Like you were saying earlier, there are these characters who are almost a superhuman level of intelligence and intensity. And maybe the fact that she's not doing this by herself makes it more realistic, more relatable. So you could see someone like her actually helping with cases like this in real life and feels less fiction.
The other relationship that I love from this first couple of chapters is Cap and his daughter Nell. What do you think about their relationship, and how does she act as a foil to Cap?
I love Cap and Nell, and I love this relationship. I think that she's clearly his daughter. Like, she's very, very smart and intuitive. I love that he seems like a pretty sentimental guy who's constantly trying to be the best dad possible, like empower her and also protect her. So I think it's very sweet. And I think he's also very self-aware of how he treats her, or how his actions or decisions could affect her, which I think is very sweet. And I like that we get to see his perspective on it.
I loved when, like, Cap is just so relatable as a person. I love when Nell calls him to say, like, can you come pick me up? Mom got a flat tire, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, does she need help? And then in his mind, he's like, yes, she does need help. Go get her immediately. We can't do this without you. Like, she's sorry for everything that went wrong. And then she's like, no, Dad, she's fine. She has AAA.
I know. And like, he didn't say any of that out loud, but you're like, that is the ruminating. That is everyone who's like lost somebody that they loved, that they were needed by. And then like, no, obviously they're living their life just fine. Like, oh,
yeah,
you feel that.
Yeah.
Poor Cap.
I think Nell also does a good job of reflecting back to him his own hero impulses. You know, especially the part where she talks about, like, you have to make little choices every day, and it's not every day you get the big choices. And she is, like, pushing him to reconsider Vega's offer or request for help, and calling in a favor to get more information about the case, because she's saying, like, this is that choice for you. You taught me to be this way, and now I'm not going to let you settle for less. And that's what when kids are the best, that's what they do.
I mean, kids are always a reflection of you. And I feel like that's one of those moments when you're like, it keeps you honest. Like, you have to then confront what you were maybe trying to avoid, because your kid is like, excuse me, that's not what you taught me. That's not what you said. This is like the cussing jar or something, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. They're keeping you honest. Okay, I have a possible other theory.
Okay.
We can be done with this.
I want to hear the theory.
Do we think Vega and Cap are going to get together? Because I just love Cap.
I really, truly hope from the bottom of my heart that they do not end up hooking
up. I think that's a little cynical of you.
I hate that. I hate when they're like, here's the male character.
Okay, I'm not asking if you like it.
Here's the female character. Watch the chemistry. And you're like, oh, it doesn't have to be that way. Can't they just be coworkers? Good.
Yes, and I'm not asking if you're going to like it. I'm asking if you think it's going to happen.
This is so, so great. I hope it doesn't. I'm so interested to see, though, now. I hadn't even thought about that.
I do also hope they keep the romance out of it so it turns into a thriller and Vega stays a badass, but I'm just saying, I feel like a lot of times it does happen that the two main characters fall in love, and also I just, like, want Cap to be happy. All right, I think it is time for Talk Talk.
Talk Talk.
Talk Talk. Erica, how was your week? Okay, I'll go first. I have actual exciting things this week.
Yes, I want to hear about your trip to Denver.
Yeah, I went to Colorado. It was great. I almost died working at 5:30 or 6 a.m. every day. But and I got altitude sickness for the first time in my life.
Ooh, I've heard that's rough.
It's never happened to me. Like, I've been to Denver plenty of times. And for some reason, I think it was also the lack of sleep, like the getting up at 5:30. I just felt like not great. And I would like walk the dog every day and be like, I can't breathe. We had a great time. I met a lot of her friends. We played lots of board games. I became obsessed with a new game called Codenames. It was very fun. And so it was like a really lovely low-key week in Denver. And then we went up into the mountains into Silverthorne, like Breckenridge area, which was great. We did a crazy hike. We actually thought it was going to be a four mile out and back hike. That was like, and then it was 8.5 miles and 11,000 feet. was worth it. The views were worth it.
Yeah. No one tells you how hard hiking is. It's not just walking.
It's really not. I was like, at the end, we were like physically climbing up to the summit and it's like rocks. And I literally am like picking up my own legs to put them on the rocks. I'm like, oh, it's hard.
I've had a very hard week, but I don't want to dwell on it. I want to share something very exciting that I purchased for myself on the internet, google.com, from Al Gore's internet in 2020. You can buy yourself a lava lamp. And let me tell you what, it has changed my entire mood. I have it in my office. I look at it all the time. I'm obsessed.
Really?
It's so soothing. Were you influenced
to buy this?
No, I wasn't. I was kind of thinking about like what's the vibe I want for my office, and I wanted like bright, relaxing. You know, this is again like James and I moved into this cubicle. I think we mentioned that on the episode with him, and we have a little bit more space. And I'm going there twice a week, and literally there's like three other people on the entire floor, so it's very like isolating and lonely. But it feels great psychologically for me to like go to the office. But I want to make it like a cozy, homey little corner.
I love that. A lava lamp.
Book Talk is made by me, Erica Bailey, and Katie Cheney, with production support from Dan White. Our theme music is by Dan White. We'll see you next week. Yeah, I fall asleep to like unsolved mysteries, so I have no problem with that.
Yeah, that's so creepy. People who do that are just like really creepy. I fall asleep to Friends or Cheers or like Golden Girls. Like, what is wrong with you?